The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as soon as the game. My name is Alex Bowen. Andrew and Bob Bendicos today. Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. Guys, we got a pretty jam-packed show. We got some college basketball to go over. And then we got college football with some spring games coming up and some that have happened already. So let's start off with the probably biggest story in college basketball today. It's crazy it is to say with the national championship not being the biggest story, but it's Coach Cal. He is leaving Kentucky to take his talents to Arkansas to be the next head coach, replacing Eric Musselman, who left to take the USC job. A pretty interesting domino effect they had there. You had SMU fire Rob Lanier. He was actually having a pretty good season for SMU. They just decided they need to get a more experienced coach in there as a move to the ACC. So they fired him, brought in USC coach Andy Enfield. USC decided, hey, let's go get Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman. And then Arkansas was like, okay, give me Coach Cal. So all that led to the culmination of Kentucky being an open job right now. What are y'all's thoughts first on Coach Cal going to Arkansas?
It blew my mind. I thought when it happened, I thought it was like a joke. I did not think that was seriously going on. It absolutely shocked me. Obviously, Arkansas had been looking around. Chris Beard rejected them. It came out that Jerome Tagg rejected them from Kansas State. And that's where I thought they were going to hit. And maybe a coach, a program that's not as – doesn't have sustained success as Arkansas has, or some of the resources Arkansas has, but kind of an up and comer is who I thought Arkansas was going to go after. No, they just go straight to Kentucky and get a blue bloods coach in John Calipari and sign him on this massive deal. Thanks to Tyson, the chicken nugget brand. It blew my mind. I have no idea how it's going to work. I heard that he's been given a big package for the NIL, which will be huge and his success. You know, Arkansas has zero scholarship players on the roster currently. So talk about a rebuilding job. And I didn't think Cal was open to taking a rebuilding job, especially, with him basically saying that I'm staying at Kentucky after the Oakland game. But it blew my mind.
Man, wait, this happened in the middle of the night, so it was very unexpected.
You had to
do a like double take when you look at your phone. Like, you're just scrolling through Twitter and be like, is this real? Do I have to recheck this? Is this a fake account? But no, this is real. I really look at this, especially going back to the Oakland game where Kentucky was lost in the first round, big upset. I think that has a huge portion to play with it because of the kind of failure Calipari has had in the tournament the last few years. And with him being upset in the first round, I think it brought his value down a little bit in terms of his spot at Kentucky. And even though they said that he was going to be returning, obviously Arkansas, when they made the offer and Calipari asked Kentucky to match it, Kentucky just didn't want to do it. And I think that's just them saying, we want to go in a different way. And I think this works out for both parties in this situation. Calipari goes to a school where he has basically no limits to what he can do with NIL and attacking through the transfer portal, kind of like what Eric Musselman was doing. But I think he can do a little bit of a better job of it, especially on the recruiting edge, because Calipari is a very, very good recruiter. Now with Kentucky, they have a very pristine job opening. And I will say this with the current class I have coming in, which is subject to change with Calipari leaving, whichever coach ends up taking the job. I know there's been thoughts of Scott Drew, which I think that would be a good fit. Whoever steps in there is going to have some work to do, but it's not going to be a talentless situation. So I think it's going to end up working out for both parties. I think the main surprise was just Eric Musselman leaving. It felt kind of sudden, even with this down year Arkansas has had. But for USC to be able to pull him away was just really unorthodox.
I think it came down for Eric Musselman going back to that side of the country because he was from Nevada before he came to Arkansas. So getting back to the West Coast, I think, was his big thing. I don't know if you consider that. I don't think the USC job is an upgrade over the Arkansas job at all. But I would assume they probably have more resources when it comes to donors and stuff like that, with it being in Los Angeles. So that might have been the big lure there. Coach Cal leaving Kentucky is weird, but it was reported that he was trying to leave well before getting this job offer from Arkansas. I believe there was reports of him wanting the Ohio State job, a couple other openings he wanted, but it didn't really work out. And then he landed this one with Arkansas due to his relationship with the Tyson Nuggets CEO or whatever, the longtime owner of it. So him being able to get that sort of deal to get out of Kentucky, I think, is what he was looking for all along. As crazy as it is to say leave Kentucky, but we are in a different age of college basketball. And I think, like Gray pointed out, Arkansas had a bigger package NIL-wise for him to go out and recruit players, whether it be incoming freshmen or transfer portal guys. So I think that was really the big thing for him going to Kentucky or going to Arkansas. Who do y'all think Kentucky, if you had to put your money behind one person, who do you think Kentucky gets?
I think it's Scott Drew at Baylor. He just seems to be the easy choice right now. And I don't really know another one that's up there. I originally thought about Billy Donovan coming back to, if he had interest coming back to college and coming back to the SEC, I feel like that would be a good fit. But Scott Drew is a home run hire for Kentucky. He's a guy that's had very good success at Baylor, won a national championship at Baylor. He is an up and comer, I would say. I don't think he's in his prime yet. I don't think he has seen his best years yet. And I think that would be a huge get if you get Scott Drew on a long-term contract. You get him in the SEC. Kentucky's always going to be a blue blood, and they're a powerhouse. But this would be a powerhouse move if they went and got a former national championship coach at Baylor.
Yeah, I'll have to second that. Scott Drew, what kind of system he has ran at Baylor, I felt like it would benefit Kentucky well, especially with the number of players they already have in the roster. And I say this now because this is a different era, like Alex has said, and the number of players that leave will probably be monumental to the success of the upcoming coach. But Scott Drew will probably fit in very well there. And then there's some other thoughts like Dan Hurley and Nate Oates, and they've already came out and denied it. It's the same as Billy Donovan. So really, it's kind of this scramble around to see who is the best coach possible we can get. And obviously at Kentucky, they're not short of money there. They can pay whatever they need to get their next head coach. But as far as fit, I think Scott Drew is probably up there.
Yeah, I think this was the problem with Kentucky wanting, if they wanted to fire Calipari after the Oakland loss, is who do we go out and hire? And at that point, there was not really okay, we can go get the Dan Hurley. We can go get the Nate Oates. It wasn't a sure thing. And now they're kind of, like Nathan said, scrambling for who's going to be my next head coach in basketball. And right now, Billy Donovan turned you down. Dan Hurley definitely turned you down after last night. The Nate Oates publicly turned you down after reports were saying that, hey, he's the number one guy. So now Scott Drew, like I pointed out, is probably the number one guy for Kentucky right now. If he turns him down, they're really going to be in for, oh my Lord, who am I hiring for my next basketball coach? Because then you get down to the second and third tier options of Bruce Pearl, Mark Pope at BYU, who played at Kentucky. I mean, you get really down to the nitty gritty of who in the world is going to be my next head coach? And is it going to be, are we going to have to settle for a guy we really didn't want all along? Or are we going to have to go do what Arkansas did and go try to lay out our checkbook for one of these big names?
Yeah,
I think it's, especially with the time we are in, it's crucial for them to go ahead and find a head coach and go and implement them. Because I know we're exiting the dead period. Number of players entering the transfer portal increases daily. So the longer you were without a head coach in this environment, the more it's going to hurt you.
Yeah, you can't fiddle fart around and are you? Yeah. All right, you had another story from last night. UConn wins second straight national championship, beating Purdue 75-60. Zach Edey scored over half his team's points. It was a rough day for Purdue. I think when it started getting out of hand, the only person, people on Purdue that had scored more than one basket was Zach Edey, Braden Smith, and then Kaufman Wren were the only three guys that had scored over one basket. So it was a rough showing for Purdue. Guys, Is this a UConn dynasty, and is this the best team of all time?
Whoa. Are they a dynasty? Absolutely. They've won four national championships in the better part of 10, 12 years. Absolutely. That's a dynasty. Winning back to back is something we haven't seen since 2006 and 2007. Are they the best team of all time? They're definitely up there. they're definitely up there. But you also look at teams that have, I think, were more talented than UConn. I think UConn would compete with anybody in terms of those. But there are teams that probably are were more skilled than them individually. But man, these past 2 years, and especially these past two tournaments, UConn has just looked like a buzzsaw to everybody. And I mean, last night in that game, that national championship game, Zach Edey and Purdue, outside of some of Purdue's guards not stepping up in the first half, I thought Purdue played perfect. I thought they played the exact half that they needed to play to win that national championship game. And they were down 6. And the same thing in the other Final Four game for UConn against Alabama. Alabama shooting over 70% from 3 in the first half. And Alabama was down 4. They just play a different brand of basketball. We've been saying that for the past few weeks. And Dan Hurley has got something special going there.
Yeah, I would go ahead and capitalize on this and say this is dynasty, exactly like you, Gray. Just what Dan Hurley has been able to do at the head coaching position at UConn has been nothing short of insane. It is so hard to go back-to-back, not only to go back-to-back, but to even to win a championship, even to make it to that level. So it's a huge accomplishment. But then you look at the greatest team of all time, and I think they make a good case for it. And they're definitely not the most talented team of all time. I think you can go look back at 2015 Kentucky. I mean, that team was absolutely stacked with NBA talent. But they ended up falling to Wisconsin. So that's definitely the most talented team of all time. But I think this is definitely the most skilled team of all time. The way they have played, I think their work ethic has just been outmatched. And they definitely had the talent to do it. But I think the hard work they had put in every single day throughout the season really got them to this point. Especially coming off last year, there was room to be kind of lazy and just kind of hang around saying, you know what? We won a national championship last year. We can go ahead and let off the gas pedal. And that is exactly the opposite of what they did this year. So I think this is probably one of the best teams of all time, if not the greatest team of all time. It's definitely very close, but it's hard to tell. As far as the game went, Purdue just didn't have the firepower at the guard position to keep up with UConn. UConn had so much more talent at the guard position. You looked at guys like Brayden Smith and Fletcher Warrior to step up, and unfortunately, they just weren't able to do that. Zach Edey tried his heart out. He committed everything he had to trying to win. But what it comes down to in March is guard play, and UConn had the better guard play. They stepped up when they needed it to. Even though Donovan Clingan, I felt, extremely struggled against Zach Edey, which was a little surprising to me. I thought that was going to be a little bit better of a matchup for him. UConn's guards got it done. And for Zach Edey moving forward, I think his draft stock has improved a little bit throughout his tournament run. I think he's not as bad of a player as everyone makes him out to be, but he certainly is not this super polished guy, talent.
Lottery pig.
Lottery pig. Yeah, I would say you can go probably take him in the second round, but as far as lottery pick, that's absurd. But for Purdue and Matt Painter, I think everyone has been very crucial at the way they have played basketball, especially these past few seasons, getting knocked out in the first round, losing to a 16 seed. But they have made it all the way to the national championship. I know they didn't win it, but it showed a lot of adversity to fight to this point in the season. And especially for Matt Painter and what he's been through at the head coaching position for Purdue, I think this adds a little bit more to his resume. Not saying he, you know, wants to lose in the national championship. He definitely wanted to win, but it definitely makes him look like a better coach than he was before.
I think the big thing for UConn is their ability to adapt and play to their opponent. You look at the Alabama game, they were almost matching them 3-point shooting wise in that first half. And they were keeping up with the pace. And you look at the Purdue, they really didn't shoot the three ball as much in the first half. Neither did Purdue. They were really trying to bang on the inside with Clingan and those big guys they had. And it was sort of just their ability to match with the way their opponents play is really what this team does well. And the sets they run are just so complex.
That's so good.
It would make any coach just so excited to watch them play. I mean, there's so many options. It's like watching the Chiefs offense and basketball. They're so complex and so cool. You look at this game, guys. Does this back-to-back performance make Dan Hurley one of the best head coaches of all time, if not the best? I don't think he's the best. I think there is a plethora of coaches in front of him. But is he on that
top 10? He's on the track too, because I mean, you were just talking about the sets that they run, and it's all him. This UConn team has his fingerprints all over him, and as they should. He's the head coach. That just makes the most sense. But you can tell when they run their offense, when they run in transition, when they're guarding teams that, just like you said, Alex, when they match their play of their opponents, like they did Alabama, and then just completely switch it up and then do it against Purdue. That's on that head coach. That proves that he's by far the best head coach in college basketball that we have right now. And I think he's not up there with those big names like Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Dean Smith. We're not even close to Dean Smith like that, but he is on track, and he's not going away. Neither is UConn. And this dynasty is going to keep going, but they're impressive.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. He is on the right track at this point in time. Winning two national championships back to back is pretty substantial when you look at it resume wise. But what he's been able to do with the transfer portal, this is a different era. So he has so many more resources he can take advantage of. I think that starts with the transfer portal, what he's done, what he added in this season, and basically plugged in all the spots that were kind of question marks at the beginning of the season. He just plugged them in, and everything has just worked so well. The chemistry of the team has impressed me a lot. With the way they've come throughout the season, and only losing three games in a season. I mean, that's very, very hard to do. And I look at Dan Hurley and the way he coaches his team. He does not stop. He fights for his team. He's all over the place. He's in the refs' ear constantly. I think that's one of the things I like about him. even though, you know, it can get a little much at times. Dan Hurley is a very, very good coach. And y'all talk about his offense. I look at the other side of the floor, the defense he implements. It is suffocating. Just all around. I look at another coach like Kelvin Sampson, the way he has his defensive sets. And it is on the point of being better than that, which is crazy for me because Houston's been this huge defensive team for a while now. But Dan Hurley is basically capitalize on every single point he can, and get, well, like you said, Gray, don't expect them to go away because they have all the resources you can ask for.
Yeah. So I think this is going to be the toughest question of them all. Is UConn officially a blue blood now with the likes of Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, and if you want to include UCLA in there, what they've done in the past, is UConn in that conversation now?
No question. No question. They've won six national championships. They've won a back-to-back. They're up there with the likes of Kansas, North Carolina, Duke, and Kentucky. And even UCLA. I hate putting UCLA up there, but I mean, you can't count out what they did in the 70s and the 80s. So yes, 100%. Six national championships officially puts you in that mark.
In 30 years too.
Yeah. Absolutely. What more could you ask them to do to be in the blue blood conversation? I'm like,
they would need another one.
You need to go win. Yeah, one more, make it a three-peat, and maybe, just maybe
we'll think about it.
Yeah, no, they are a blue blood. And this is UConn's decade to start out with. And I know so roughly early, we're not into the midpoint of the decade yet, but so far it has been UConn's decade, and it is theirs until they decide to lose.
It definitely is right now. I mean, Dan Hurley has got that thing running like a machine. That, like I pointed out, the portal, I mean, he's attacked that really well. I think for him to repeat this time around is much more difficult than what Billy Donovan did back in 06, 07, because Billy Donovan didn't have to deal with the portal. He returned all of his starters. Mm-hmm. Dan Hurley didn't return Hawkins, Jackson, Sanogo. He lost three guys, and he went to the portal and attacked that. But I think it was harder to sort of maintain those guys of, hey, then maybe they want to go to the draft. Maybe they want to leave and go to a different school. So I think it was a much harder turnaround for this UConn team. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here this time next year and we're talking about UConn going for a three-peat the way Hurley coaches and he recruits.
Yeah.
So before we get into college football, guys, let's discuss our teams here. Alabama season obviously came to an end at the hands of UConn. I believe that was the smallest amount of smallest loss smallest deficit UConn had there. So just what are your thoughts on this Alabama season and what happened in the tournament run?
Take it away, man.
Well, yeah, I go back and I think about midseason or even back to the beginning of the season where we started and throughout SEC play and into the SEC tournament. And this just didn't look like a polished product. I think we struggled. I mean, obviously we struggled a lot defensively. The offense was there multiple nights, but then some nights it would just be non-existent and you really questioned what was going on, why the team was performing like that. Especially after the Florida loss in the SEC tournament, your kind of hope for success in March Madness was not really there. In order to win in March, you usually think you have to, you know, be hot. You have to be on this win streak. You have to kind of dominate against your opponents. And Alabama was doing really none of that. I mean, we go back to the last regular season game. We went to overtime with one of the worst Arkansas teams I've ever seen. And I think that a lot of adversity, adversity is a huge thing in college basketball. When you can fight through something hard that has happened to you, when you lose multiple games, when everyone ties down on you in the media, I think that it kind of creates an issue where players can fight through that and show adversity. And that gave the opportunity for Bama to do that. I think it was a matter of favorability because I don't think Alabama's run was super difficult to go through. I mean, I look at Charleston. We matched up extremely well against Charleston. Charleston tried to do what we did, but they did a little worse. We were against a Grand Canyon team that had won their first tournament game ever. And even though they were good defensively, they didn't have the offensive firepower to keep up. And we found defense in the tournament. And then I think the biggest task was going against North Carolina. I think Nate Oates really should get a lot of credit there in the way he game planned. I think that set the team up for success. Not only that, but then you look at Grant Nelson, what he was able to do and how certain people stepped up when they needed to. And then even moving on to the Clemson game, Jaron Stevenson, a freshman that really should still be in high school, comes out and just has an unbelievable game, scoring 19 points, setting a career high. And then you talk about Mark Sears and Nick Pringle, what they were able to do in that matchup. And they get to the Final Four. It's something unexpected, but Alex, I will keep going back to this, what we highlighted all the way back in the middle of the season. March is about guard play, and Alabama had the best guard in the country on their team, and he willed them to the Final Four. I know they came up short against UConn, but for a minute there, you could almost believe that Alabama could beat UConn the way they had the lead against them and the way they competed. Nate Oates is on the trajectory to be one of the top 10 best coaches in the country, the way he has competed in March Madness. The crazy thing is Mark Sears could return. Like, Mark Sears has flown under the radar. I think the number of people that could return is insane. Alvin, we said it next year. But this year's team was a lot different from last year's. It wasn't as talented. It kind of, you didn't expect it to do what it did in March. And I think that's all about experience, the way that they have been through many different situations. And they showed their experience through March and got to that point. You got to be proud of the way they competed, even though they came up short. But their program wise, Alabama's on the right track.
Yeah, for sure. I want to think about the even talk about midseason and towards the end of the year, Alabama was not playing their best basketball. And, you know, especially we talked about on this podcast on the defensive end and how they can shoot the lights out, but they go cold during stretches. Alabama played their best four games in the West region, I think, all year. The game against Charleston, the game against Grand Canyon, the game against North Carolina, especially. I think that was by far their best game of the year. And the game against Clemson. I think those were their four best 40-minute full performances all year. And that's what you ask for in March. That's the best time to do it. And that's what led them to the Final Four. And they competed against UConn. You know, we talked about UConn being one of the better teams of all time, how skilled they were. Alabama's right there with them. The entire first half, they're right there with them. You know, we talked about how Alabama played a perfect first half, I think. UConn was just different. That's exactly what you want to see from a season that wasn't going exactly to plan or exactly to what Alabama fans, I think, expected this team to be. It's exactly what you want to see going into making a run in March, showing what they had been missing all year. The defense was so, so much better. They were lights out from three, had big players step up that weren't Mark Sears. You know, when Sears played, I think, his best four games that he's ever played in those four games. It's going to go down as one of the best seasons in the history of Alabama basketball, because you're going to hang a banner outside of Coleman Coliseum. And that's the big deal. That's such a huge thing for a program and for Nate Oates, to use that in recruiting, to use that, you know, moving forward, say, hey, we were that close. You know, we were two games away. We can get there. You can help us get there. People don't understand how big of a tool that is. And I think that's what Alabama fans need to move forward from this season, taking away, is, look, as frustrating as some of the early season losses were, as frustrating as the loss to Florida in the SEC tournament was, this season was a huge success because you're hanging a banner.
Yeah, I think, like I pointed out last week, it doesn't matter how you play in September, November, January, February. It matters what you turn out to be in March. And Alabama, like I both pointed out, found their footing in this tournament. They played their best four games, five, if you want to include the UConn game, of the year. They just fell short against UConn. And the way they played against the Huskies, they played really well, almost a perfect game. It's just UConn, different type of team. And after that great Nelson dunk, it was like UConn turned a different, flipped a switch, and it was, No, we're not letting this happen. And they just went on a huge run. And at the end of the day, Alabama, they weren't expected to be there. I think if you ask the players, they expected themselves to be there regardless of what happened in the regular season. And they performed up to the best of their ability. And going forward, like I both pointed out, this team set up really well. Nate Oates is probably a top three coach in the country right now. And the way he's recruiting, the guys he's got coming in, hopefully some people stay. This team, I would expect to be back competing for a Final Four next season, especially if Mark Sears returns, because that'll be a huge thing.
Yeah, I think I saw a fun fact here, because I love some fun facts. This Alabama team officially played the hardest strength of schedule in KenPom history, which is absolutely absurd. And for them to fight through, I think, you know, I say this, I just repeat it. It goes back to experience and what they had to experience in December when we lost three straight games on our hardest schedule. We lost to Purdue, we lost to Creighton, we lost to Arizona. Three really, really good teams. I mean, Purdue made the national championship, and we were right there with them. We honestly could have won that game. We just played a little bit better defense. And the experience from those three games, I really think, fueled this Final Four run. And it was surprising nonetheless. I'm just really proud of the way. I didn't think I was going to be able to see this anytime soon. I didn't think it was going to be this year that I was going to be able to see them make a Final Four. I mean, I don't think any of us, when we were over here making our brackets, could have expected them to make this run. So I think just how many people picked them as underdogs, or even people who doubted them in the media, and this constant kind of criticizing the team and the way they played, probably also fueled them. And it's something special. You gotta take it all in. And it sucks for the guys who had to leave, because I'm sure they want to come back and experience it one more time, especially with the class coming in. While I say that, I think only Aaron Estrada has to leave. So it's not kind of that much of a bittersweet moment. And especially for Aaron Estrada making his first ever tournament, he made a Final Four. So it's special to him.
Yeah. I mean, he was a part of Alabama history. You can't take that away from me. You can take that away from any of the guys. They were a part of history. All right, guys, flipping over to the Auburn Tigers here. Their tournament run obviously came to a quick end to Yale in the first round, round of 64. And you had three guards enter the portal right as of right now: Trey Donaldson, KD Johnson, and then just recently today, Aiden Holloway entered. Well, what's going on the Plains right now with all these guards transferring? And Bruce, these past few seasons, losing these marquee recruits he's had. You had Yoan Traore last year and Ada Holloway this year, both transferring out.
Yeah, it sounds like this team is hitting a reset in the backcourt. Outside of Denver Jones, it's going to be all new. Unless Trey Donaldson decides to come back, which I'm hearing that's the only one that would, or is in that boat. But it's a little weird, because this team was, obviously this team was competing very well throughout the season. And I thought they had some big wins, some questionable losses. They go on this great run in the SEC tournament, win it. And then, really just have their game plan shattered at the very beginning of the Yale game, and Yale shot unbelievable. And you give hats off to Yale for that. And then it came to a very screeching halt. And Bruce, I think, has to address why did we lose that Yale game? I understand Baker Mazar was ejected and that hurt your team. I understand, this play went wrong. This play went wrong, but how do I fix it for the following year? And how do I attack the transfer portal because of it? Because that's such a major thing nowadays. And it really does look like it's a backcourt thing. And he's concerned that his backcourt wasn't going in the direction that he wants them to go to, I guess. Bruce Pearl said at the very beginning of this past year, this team is going to go as far as Jani Broome can take them. I don't have an experienced backcourt. KD Johnson is my most experienced backcourt player. that's not good. Denver Jones has played, but he's played at a very low level. He's played very well, but not at an SEC level. So that's what he meant about experience there. Obviously, in Holloway is a freshman, and Trey Donaldson was just a true sophomore. So he was very worried about experience at that backcourt position. And I think that shows in what he's doing here with the transfer portal, who he's targeting in the transfer portal. You hear rumors about them targeting Furman guard JP Pegues, the Washington State all freshman team or all Pac-12 freshman team, point guard Miles Rice. He wants, power five, but experienced guards who have played at a high level. And JP Pegues, I think he's a grad transfer. So an older,
he's only a junior.
He's only a junior. Okay. 1 year. He's only got 1 year though. He'll be a senior next year. What's going to happen? It's going to be an interesting month ahead for Bruce Pearl and for the staff, to regroup, reassess the team, see what happens. Does Jani Broome come back? Does Dylan Carwell come back? Because the only guy who absolutely cannot come back on this past year's team, outside guys in the transfer portal that we've seen, is Jalen Williams. And what do we do? And what do we do with his spot? Does Chaney Johnson fill in? Do we go out and get a transfer? Do you do both? What's going to happen there? So it'll be an interesting next month or so, especially with the dead period coming up. JP Pegues has already visited. Miles Rice plans to visit after the dead period is over. So we'll find out.
I will say this about Bruce Pearl. His the way he attacks the transfer portal and the way he recruits has been on another level for a while now. The only concern I continue to have is the way Auburn has kind of developed guards into what they need to be. And ever since, Jerry Harper and Bruce Brown left, it's kind of been this hole at the guard position, and no one really has stepped up. I mean, you talk about KD Johnson. He has his own issues and with the way he played, even though he gave 100% effort out there. And then I looked at Aiden Holloway and the way he played this past season. I felt like he was on the right track for a solid month, and then his shots weren't falling. His shot selection struggled. He struggled on the defensive end. And at that point, I kind of felt like his development was kind of all out of sync and off schedule. And he just didn't look like a polished product, which, in my opinion, he probably should have at the end of the season. And whether that be, to his work ethic or to the lack of playing time, I don't know. But it's something to say that the Yale loss, it's bad. But what you can take away from it is that Auburn struggled at the guard position, and that is where they need to improve. Just like you said, Gray, Jani Broome can't be the one guy who puts the team on his back. I mean, we see what tenors can do in March Madness. I mean, Zach Edey alone carried his team to a national championship, I would say. But unfortunately for Jani Broome, he's not 7'4". He has his limits on the offensive end. While he is good on defense, he has his limits on the offensive end, and he alone can't be relied on to win a game for Auburn. And basketball is a team sport, and whenever you don't have a backcourt that can pick it up, you are going to lose games to teams like Yale with guys who can shoot the lights out of the ball. And that game they did. And then it's next round, they just completely disappeared against San Diego State. It's the weirdest thing. It is March.
Auburn. Yeah.
Auburn, March, you name it. But going forward, if Auburn wants to continue to compete in certain situations, especially in the SEC, they have to develop guards better. Mm-hmm. And whether that be through recruiting or through the transfer portal, it is going to have to be number one on their list.
Yeah.
Hopefully Pettiford can break the 2-year streak of Bruce's number one recruits coming in, transferring out and being absolutely terrible. Because it's just like, what are we doing? You see Nate Oates, what he does at Alabama, and then you got Bruce Pearl and Auburn with his incoming recruits. Great. If you had to pick between Miles Rice and JP Pegues, who do you want as your point guard going into next year?
I think both of them have their pros and cons. JP Pegues is a much better shooter. I think he adds a whole different element to being a point guard at the one spot. I think him and Denver playing together would space the floor very, very well, especially with guys like Baker Mazzara and even Jani Broome out there on the court at the same time. That would be, you have five guys out there that can really shoot the basketball. That changes your entire team. That changes your offense. But the downside to Pegues is he's a 1-year loan. He'll be a senior coming in next year, rather than Miles Rice, who's more of a true point guard. He can score very well. I think he's better at getting to the basket and scoring, but he is more of a true point guard, a true passer, compared to Pegues. He will have 3 years of eligibility if he were to come in and step into that role at the one spot. Do you go and you offer these both of these, not deals, but scenarios to both of these guys and say, hey, both of y'all come in, Pegues, you get your 1 year, and Rice, you back him up, and then you get 2 years. And what do you see from that? What is Miles Rice seeing from other teams? And same thing with Pegues, he's interested in Florida and obviously South Carolina being from Furman. So I think right now I'd probably say JP Pegues. I think the Auburn side of things feels very confident for where they are with Pegues. That's who knows to say, because it's the transfer portal. Anything can happen. But I think Pegues would change the Auburn offense next year. It's something that we only saw this year when Aiden Holloway was an efficient 3-point shooter. Like at the beginning of the year, the Auburn offense was much more spaced out. Jani Broome had a lot more opportunities to score in the post. Denver Jones was shooting the ball really well. I think Denver Jones needs to take that Bryce Brown role next year. But to have a Bryce Brown role, you've got to have a shooter beside him, with like you had for Jared Harper. So I'd probably say JP Pegues.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
Yeah. I think it's agreeance here. I think the main thing you look at is you have Pettiford coming in and Pegues, who is kind of more experienced. Maybe he, even with going through SEC play, maybe he can offer a little bit of a mentor spot to Pettiford and kind of get him used to the play of college basketball, because college basketball compared to high school basketball is completely different. And getting Pettiford into a comfortable scenario, I think, is probably top notch. Even if you lose Big East after 1 year, I think it's going to make more of an impact on a team like Auburn, who does have veteran pieces, but also has younger guys coming in.
Yeah, I think Big East adds that shot creating ability much more than Miles Rice does. Because watching Miles Rice this year, like Gray said, he's more of a get to the basket type guy. He'll facilitate, but he's not going to be shooting the lights out. He's a below 30% 3-point shooter. Big East is, I think, at 36 or 37%. So he's much better in that regard. I know he's older, but like I pointed out, he's going to be a better mentor for these younger guys. And like Nathan pointed out earlier, Bruce Pearl's track record with developing these younger guards is not great. Miles Rice, I know he's going to have 3 years of eligibility compared to Big East's one, but I think Big East will get you to the national championship much better than Miles Rice would if you're going into next year and you bring back Broom, Cardwell, and all the guys on that roster. Moving on to college football here, guys. Auburn had their spring game. Gray, what were your takeaways from the game that made you excited about Auburn football going into next season? And then what are some points you're still a little bit worried about?
Yeah, so I think it's exactly what every Auburn fan wanted to see from an A-Day. You know, to talk about last year's A-Day, Auburn fans deserved the weather that we got in this year's. You know, last year it was like a monsoon, and we just ran the ball three straight times up the middle, and it was like, all right, let's go home. And nobody was there. It wasn't fun. It didn't feel like, you know, Hugh Freeze's first A-Day. This one did. They aired it out a lot more. The stats will show that the running game was not good. I would argue that I'm not worried about the running game at all. You know, you bring back all three of your running backs from the year before, Jarquez Hunter, you bring back Damari Alston, and you bring back Jeremiah Cobb, as well as Brian Batty as kind of a flex option, jet sweep, kick returner option. And then you bring back Peyton Thorne, who is also a much more polished runner than people were expecting Peyton Thorne to be. Talking about the quarterbacks, we saw four different quarterbacks. All of them were running a pure RPO system, a true Hugh Freeze offense. Watching the offense, we didn't see the open playbook that we're going to see, probably not until Oklahoma comes into town. But I think we saw the quarterbacks with the freedom to make decisions on their own. And I think that's where Peyton Thorne excelled at Michigan State. And I think that's where he could excel here at Auburn with the weapons around him. You know, Thorne looked very comfortable. He looked the most like the quarterback one. He looked like a leader out there offensively. Hank Brown and Holden Gardner showed some flashes of some incredible arm talent type throws. Walker White looked a bit jacked up as a freshman, as somebody who still should be a senior in high school right now. He looked a bit excited. A lot of his throws in the first few drives he had were high and a little too much zip on him. But then once he settled down, he had one really nice drive with some couple nice throws. He is very promising. He is a Hugh Freeze quarterback. I think he ends up, you know, taking that job over in 2025 when Peyton Thorne leaves. Hey, talk about the offense, dude. Auburn has not had a wide receiver like Cam Coleman in the history of Auburn football. And he completely makes this team and this offense different. He 100% does. And you know, this wide receiver room, as good as they looked, they're still missing three vital pieces in this wide receiver room. You know, Caleb Burton didn't play because of injury. He had been dealing with it since he had a hamstring injury early in spring practice, so he did not play. And then you didn't get to see Perry Thompson and Malcolm Simmons. Both of those guys are summer enrollees. But this wide receiver room looks completely different. And it's because of the impact that Cam Coleman makes of, you know, pulling safeties away from him. Guys, he's going to get the best matchup on opposing teams' corners, which he did in the A-Day game, where he got the best matchup with Kane Lee, Auburn's best corner. And that kind of drew some things open for guys like Camden Brown, who looked a lot better than he did last year. Goodness gracious.
And it's hard not to look worse.
That's very true. And the Georgia State transfer, Robert Lewis, who is much more polished than a lot of these young guys. You know, I think Auburn fans need to have realistic expectations for these, you know, very young wide receivers. They are freshmen. you know, four of these guys are freshmen. A lot of them are sophomore. Caleb Burton's a sophomore. And a lot of these guys are very inexperienced. They're coming in. They're running the new offense too. So I think Auburn fans need to have realistic expectations for these guys. There were a few mistakes. The offensive line and defensive line is what I was worried about going into spring. I think saying that I'm more confident about the offensive line than the defensive line is weird because I haven't said that since 2013. Because we didn't recruit offensive linemen for years. But the offensive line looks very good, led by a true sophomore center, Connor Liu. He looks incredible. Mississippi State transfer Percy Lewis on the left tackle. He looks like an NFL left tackle, which allowed us to move Dylan Wade, who was our left tackle last year, into left guard. People think he's much more fit there, and it showed in the A-Day game. The pass protection was magnificent. It was exactly what you want to see, especially for the RPO offense that we're going to run this year. And then for the defensive line is probably what I was most concerned about. Losing Marcus Harris this year, it was bad. You know, Marcus Harris was so huge, this defensive line last year, especially in games. Like, he kept us in that Georgia game at home. That was big. And I still think Auburn needs to address some things on the defensive line. That would be my one concern moving forward. They're not deep there. They're really not. They've got talent. Keldrick Faulks there. Bobby Travis really stepped up this spring. There's talent there. The Texas transfer Troy Carter, he's been playing really well. They've got some talent there, but they're going to need some more depth pieces. The linebackers looked really good, and obviously the DBs and Coach Mike Charles Kelly. The defensive backs were incredible. They look like the defensive backs that we had last year with DJ James, Jalen Simpson, Nehemiah Pritchett. Kay and Lees look like he's taken that next step. Champ Anthony, JC Hart, all of them looked really well, or looked really good. The linebackers is the one I want to talk about. You know, concerned about depth, obviously. You got Eugene Asante coming back is huge. But I was really concerned, are we going to have to rely on some of these freshmen? You know, Auburn had one of the best linebacker classes in the country this past year, in this past freshman class. Are we going to have to rely on some of those freshmen? And I think a lot of them played really well in the A-Day game. I really liked the play from Robert Woodyard, the true sophomore, lost a lot of weight this past offseason. I think he's got a chance to take a step forward. Maybe do we see Jerrion Thompson, the Texas safety transfer, playing the box a lot more as a bigger safety? It's going to be interesting. DJ Durkin's got his hands all over this defense right now. They played really well, especially in the red zone. I was really, really pleased with that. And then, of course, Towns Magoo, dude. Hey, look, Alex McPherson's going to be the kicker. He didn't miss a kick last year, and he was perfect. But man, what you've got in Towns Magoo, the late add to this class on signing day from Auburn High School, goes 7 of 7 and kicks a 58-yarder walk-off to win it for the offense. I thought it was exactly what I wanted to see for May Day.
All right, Nathan, flipping over to Alabama here. There are A-Day is coming up this weekend, April 13th at 3 p.m. It'll be put on ESPN compared to Auburn's getting put on SEC Network Plus. And Greg can have a whole conversation about that broadcast. But going into this game, Nathan, what players or position groups are you most going to be looking at? Whether they be quarterback, running back, DB, what are you most be looking at as this game transpires?
Yeah, well, first off, I'll talk about the quarterback position. Jalen Milroe coming off a spectacular season last year, I would say. He really surprised me in certain situations. But the way that Tyson Sim has performed throughout spring practice so far, I don't think it surprised me as much because I expected him to play well. He has shown what he can do time and time again. So maybe for him to get more reps, maybe with the first team, I would like to see that. But I mean, that's basically your quarterback battle right there. It's going to be something else. But then I look at the wide receiver room, and especially with what we're bringing in, Ryan Williams basically being the big guy on campus, what he is going to be able to do next year, even with I compare him to a guy like King Coleman because they're both young talents. And I think they'll be right there, neck and neck, but they will need to develop. And then looking at what the running back room will be, with Justice Haynes, I think it being the number one guy for me, I want to see do well. And kind of, he reminds me of the way he runs a lot like Derrick Henry, because he runs bad sometimes. And I think that's going to be a big step. And then flipping around to the defense, just the development of the guys in the secondary, especially with a whole new defensive look with, Womack being the new coordinator. I know with his new look, it's going to be kind of weird. It's not the Nick Saban defense we've come to know, but the development of the secondary guys is going to be the biggest part for me throughout this spring game. And I know it's going to look very, very raw out there. So don't expect anything to look like, there's going to be problems everywhere. But that's what spring practice is for.
Yeah. I think this quarterback position is a lot more open than people think it is. Mm-hmm. The reports coming out from spring practice with Ty Simpson playing really well. Haven't heard a lot of news of Jalen Milroe, not saying Milroe is not playing good in practice because he saw what he did last season. But I think Simpson fits more of what DeBoer wants to do with the quarterback position than Jalen Milroe does. Simpson's more of a pocket passer, more of a precision passer. Milroe not so much, wants to get outside the pocket, scramble. He has that deep ball. I'm not taking that away from him, but he does struggle at the short intermediate levels of passing. We saw it all last year. That was a big struggle, completing those passes outside of players still like Isaiah Bond. So I think this quarterback position is a lot more wide open. I would expect Jalen Milroe to start the season, but if we're sitting here in December and Ty Simpson is the starting quarterback, I would not be surprised. We'll see what that happens there. Another thing I look for is the position group, the defensive line and the linebackers. Who takes over as that Dallas Turner, Will Anderson, premier pass rusher? Keanu Coate has been getting a lot of praise in practice. You obviously got Quay Rousseau. There's a lot more, Keon Keeley. So they have a lot of talent there, but who's going to be that, those one or two guys to step up and be that premier pass rusher going forward? I'll look for that, who gets those runs in the first team. Mm-hmm. And then the secondary, obviously, what does that look like? Who's starting where? Do we see Damani Jackson, Keon Sabb up there? Do we see the freshmen coming in? Do they get playing time? Well, how does this all shake out? And I think the big thing for this team is the offensive line. I think Alabama's offensive line is honestly in a worse position right now than the Auburn offensive line. As crazy as it is to say, because like Gray pointed out with Auburn, they have not recruited that offensive line well. But Alabama, that offensive line last year was a big issue. Seth McLaughlin not being able to snap the ball. Caden Proctor, inability to move his feet properly, looked like an elephant on the field moving. JC Latham honestly sold the final play of the Michigan game, getting pushed back into Jalen Milroe. I think the strong point of this offensive line is the guards with Booker and Roberts. Roberts has been dealing with an injury. We'll see what that happens there. But what shakes out here, because it's been reported Brailsford's not even the starting center. The guy transferred from Washington. It's Brockmeyer right now. What does that look like? Who are the tackles? Proctor came back from Iowa now. Is he still at left tackle? Is he moving back? Is he moving to right tackle? Is he even going to start? I would assume he starts, like, considering he came back. What does the right tackle position look like? Obviously, Latham's gone. So the offensive line has a lot of question marks there outside of the guards. But like I said, it's in a much worse position than it has been in past years. Any thoughts, Gray, on Alabama's offensive line?
The offensive line, I felt like was, and I know, like, technically it was, which held this team away from a national championship last year. I feel like if Alabama had the offensive line from 2000, you name it, after 2008, I guess, any other offensive line, Alabama ends up crowning themselves national champions last year, because I feel like they overpower Michigan. Michigan won the line of scrimmage last year, and that's something that you don't see from an Alabama team or a lot at all. And I know Nick Saban's gone, and this is a new era of Alabama football, and it's going to be a completely different offense and defense. And I'm excited to see what do we see? I know we're not going to see a polished product on at the A-Day game, but I'm excited to see what we see at the beginning of the year, but talking about the offensive line, that is a major question mark that Alabama is going to have to answer no matter what happens at the quarterback room, no matter what we see from these young wide receivers, these stud wide receivers, no matter what we see from Justice Haynes and this defense. Alabama has got to address what's happening on the offensive line. And I think they will. I, you know, the offensive line's got talent. It's not like, you know, it's a recruiting issue or a personnel issue. It's about, can they step up and dominate the line of scrimmage against these SEC teams? And I think we're going to find out, you know, week five against Georgia. And that'll be by far the best defensive line and front seven that they face. And that's going to be the tall tale and to see what Alabama does moving forward.
Yeah, that'll be coming up this weekend, so everybody tune in and watch that. Like I said, it'll be on ESPN, so you'll be able to get an easy access to it compared to the Auburn game getting put on SEC Network Plus and all that. But that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.